Hello and welcome to Arcane Connection episode 15, and I suppose we need a title for this one, so this will be the one where we talk about the Bundle of Holding.
So, and 4th edition.
And 4th edition. Today I'm joined by Tom Knoll.
Hello.
Who many of you will know from previous podcasts, who's been my host for the vast majority of these 15 now. And, well, Tom, would you like to say a little bit about what Bundle of Holding is? I mean, we're not connected with the project in any way.
So, the idea of the Bundle of Holding is they sell off bundles of PDFs, raise money for charity. So for a small amount, you get the core books in a bundle, and then there's a larger amount, which if you pay, you get the full bundle with extra things added in.
Yeah, and basically it's just a way of buying PDF RPG books.
Yeah.
And a 10%, I think, or a percentage goes to charity.
Yeah.
And a percentage goes to the creators. And charities are generally fairly good, and it's a great way of raising money and also gaining awareness. Recently, I've bought RuneQuest 6 that way. I bought some Traveller books that way. I bought a Dying Earth set. I bought a, not Unknown Armies, Over the Edge. The Over the Edge collection, really? Which I had nearly all of already. And at that point, I joked and made a bet that it would be not long before we saw Ars Magica 4 released. I then said, well, perhaps even Ars Magica 5. And I was right, because in the current Bundle of Holding, for $14, you can get a whole load of games, including Chivalry and Clockwork. You've played that, haven't you?
No. Unfortunately, this is one point where I get to be angry at CJ. I spent all that time generating a character, and you then run it with the other group.
Yeah, I haven't run it with the group in Cheltenham. I ran it with the Tewkesbury bunch. I've run two of the adventures in the sort of 5 or 6 part campaign they did, though they changed the rules halfway through on me.
Right.
And actually, thinking about what I've seen, yeah, that looks like the first edition. Maybe
it's the second edition that's in the bundle.
It's the second edition that's in the bundle. Right, it's the first edition that I own. I thought it was the first edition in the bundle, but I haven't checked, so we'll take Tom's word. It's quite an interesting setting. Do you explain what that setting's about?
So, it's the English Civil War, but alchemy exists, various bits of clockwork and vaguely steampunk sort of technology exists, and so the Civil War is being fought with alchemy powders and potions, and the parliamentarian forces have got a couple of gigantic land ships that they use in battle.
Yep. There's also Agon, which is an ancient Greek game, which I've heard a lot of very good things about, which I'm told is somewhat Indian style. Beat to Quarters, which I think is...
Napoleonic, they said.
Yeah, Age of Sail. It's Hornblower, that kind of C.F. Forrester style. Colonial Gothic 2nd Edition, which has interested me for a long time. And... was that an Atlas product? There was something similar that Atlas did.
That was, Northern Crown, the one that Atlas did.
Which I want to actually have a look at. I've never got to play Northern Crown, so okay. But then, the reason why for your $15 and 2 cents, or about a tenner, it's really worth getting this time, copy of Ars Magica 5 in PDF. Now, at the moment, Tom, I don't really need a copy of Ars Magica 5 in PDF. I don't actually own one. But I have a couple of copies of the core rules floating around.
Just a couple.
I think we've all got at least one or two copies of the hardback, haven't
we? I think you have two intact copies and one split in two.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, I do wear them out. I went through 3 copies of the 4th edition rulebook because it was a paperback and it just used to fall apart from being used so much.
Yes.
More than most games, Ars Magica comes in for a lot of heavy usage. The rules are constantly used.
You do refer to them a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's also a game where it's really useful. If you're going to play in an Ars Magica game, you want everybody to have the rules.
Yes.
It's almost essential that everybody has access to the rules. Well, it's not absolutely essential, but I'd say it's definitely very, very useful.
Yes.
So, with that in mind, I'm hoping that a lot of people are going to take this opportunity to pick up 5th edition.
Yes.
4th edition was free for a while, of course.
From the Atlas site.
From the Atlas site, a long time ago. Just before 5th edition was launched, Atlas made 4th edition. And I mean, we could speculate that maybe 6th edition will be announced tomorrow and we'll still be able to buy it by the end of the week, because that's what happened when 4th edition. But this isn't the same. This isn't a giveaway.
No.
You do actually still have to pay for it. So, okay, I'm going to guess that isn't going to happen. Nobody's told me how it is. Not that I would necessarily know. But 5th edition is definitely a great game.
Yes.
I mean, do you think it's better than the 4th edition rules?
You've not played, have you? I've barely played any 4th. In the 1990s, I played a bit of 3rd edition.
Right.
Didn't pick up ours again until 5th edition. At conventions, I've played a couple of sessions of 4th edition games, but I've not played a huge amount of 4th edition.
Whereas I have played an incredible amount of 4th edition, probably as much 4th edition as I have 5th edition. So I think it's really worth playing as a game. I actually, in some ways, I even prefer... There are certain mechanics... I mean, if you were using the 4th edition rules, you'd have to replace the combat system, you'd have to modify it, you'd have to get rid of the encumbrance rules. Luckily, you don't have to, because now you can get the 5th edition for such a cheap price.
Yes.
So, let's talk about... I know our fans are obviously the people who love Ars Magica and listen every week. Let's imagine that you've just bought the 5th edition rulebook in the bundle of holding.
Yep.
What now? What do you do with it? How do you run Ars Magica? Well, the first thing is you're going to need to read the rules, and learning the rules is harder than most games.
Learning the very basic rules isn't very hard. Getting your head around the magic system will take forever.
Now, luckily, I've done a little slideshow which teaches you the magic system.
Yes.
And which I'll link to wherever you downloaded this podcast from. You'll be able to find a link there. And I've also written an article on how to set up, how to run your first Ars Magica adventure.
Yes.
And setting up your saga or campaign. And I'll link that as well.
Yes.
So there are some resources we've made available. There are some sample covenants have been done recently. A number of people have done those.
Yes.
And if you go to the Atlas Games forum, you can see a lot there about it. And there's a huge number of people in the community who will go out of their way to teach you and to help you learn the rules.
Yes.
But learning Ars Magica, setting up your first game, is always going to be insanely difficult compared with, say, running D&D.
Yes. I mean, when my friends got a copy of 5th edition, we looked at the rules, generated characters, but we found the thing which was most immediately off-putting was looking at the vast, vast number of spells and the complexity of the magic rules and going, how are we going to do our wizards from this?
Right.
Looking at the rules, the virtues and flaws, how to do a companion, no problem. How to do a grog, run them through some basic tasks, no problem. Getting your head around the magic, actually, keeping the concentration, our real-world concentration skills were not quite as good as your average Ars Magica 4th character. We couldn't just concentrate on the book long enough to really get our head around the magic straight from the book.
Yeah, it's a difficult game to learn, but it's extraordinarily rewarding once you do learn it. And that's why you get a lot of really hardcore players, and why we still have, every year, here in the UK and in America, a convention dedicated just to Ars Magica. And Grand Tribunal is very welcoming, especially to people who've got the rules but never actually got to play, because they can't find anybody else who will. Because it's a chance to actually see how it all works in practice.
Yes.
There's also, well worth considering picking up, a magazine called Sub Rosa. I'll put a link to that as well, wherever you found this podcast. And Sub Rosa will... If you purchase a few copies on PDF, it's well worth the investment, because there will be adventures there.
There's an adventure every issue, so you get to see how...
Most. I think there might be one or two without. But anyway, yeah. And those adventures show how to write for Ars Magica, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, what else would be helpful to people who are just starting out in Ars Magica? What, I mean, obviously, they'll need to find the Atlas Games forum. They can Google for that. They should listen to Arcane Connection, because we've done a lot of it, actually. A lot of the episodes have been dedicated to helping people get into the game. The really great news is Bundle of Holding is about to do, apparently, a load of 4th edition books.
Yes.
Now, the 4th edition books, let's talk a bit about those. I don't know which one's going to be included, but the Medieval Bestiary, you could use the stats with 5th edition... And I don't think it would cause you any problems at all, really. I don't think you'd even notice. I mean, yes, 5th edition is a much better designed, balanced system, but the stats are essentially the same.
But on the other hand, you can look online for the St. John's College Bestiary and look at those wonderful medieval pictures and be inspired yourself to completely create...
You can, but Ars Magica 5th edition doesn't include the rules for creating animals in the core rulebook, remember?
And also... Also, in the 5th edition one, they did not include the Bonnikin. How can you not include a magic cow who, if it gets disturbed, its poo destroys the fertile quality of 3 acres of land?
Well, if you remember Fantasy Wargaming, which came out in, I think, 1981, which was a hardback book,
yes,
of wargame rules, it included my favourite mythical monster of all time, the Vorpal Sheep. Yes, the Vorpal Sheep, you know, which could decapitate you easily.
Yes. So, but the Bonnikan, is there the Bastari?
Yeah, okay, so it's a real creature. However, the point is that there is actually a supplement called the Book of Mundane Beasts, which gives stats for the animals you're likely to need in your game, and that's free to download from the Atlas Games website. So long as you know it exists. So it's called the Book of Mundane Beasts, and it's very useful. And then, if you've bought the 5th edition bundle, you're probably going to buy the 4th edition bundle that's coming up, which is going to have a lot of the old supplements. And actually, the rules differences, you don't really need to worry about doing any conversion. You can use the stats pretty much as they are.
The same, the knowledges are very similar.
They won't be quite right, but the difference will be between, you know, an attack of plus 11 and an attack of plus 12, maybe, in some things. You know, it's not going to make any difference from the player's viewpoint if you use older stuff. I've done it. I mean, when I first started running 5th edition, I was running 4th adventures, and I wasn't bothering to do any conversion, which is lazy, but there just wasn't any point. The characters were designed, we used the 5th edition rules, but I used the stats from the 4th edition, because they are essentially the same. Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're using 4th edition Magi. Now, I can't actually remember that much about it, but I would certainly say the Medieval Bestiary is an excellent book. Fairies was brilliant, John Sneed's book.
Never read it.
It's 3rd edition. It was a wonderful book. There was a 2nd edition version as well. There was a 2nd edition of the Medieval Bestiary.
No, the main 4th edition books I've read have been tribunal ones, like the Novgorod one or the Blood and Sand, the Levant one.
Yeah, now tribunal books are settings, and the 4th edition ones, let's see if we can remember what they were Sanctuary of Ice by Timothy Ferguson.
Yep.
Definitely an interesting setting in the Alps. It's about a mature, civilised kind of culture of magi, powerful magi, where, you know, new bugs have to work hard to fit in and play by the rules. So it's quite claustrophobic and restrictive as a culture.
But all the magi are quite well off in magical terms.
Yeah. That was Blood and... that's Sanctuary of Ice. Blood and Sand is the Levant.
Yes.
And is obviously, you know, the Near East. It's the Holy Lands, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. Outremer and the Holy Lands.
Yeah, it's an interesting book. It's good. It's got potential. It might, unless you're very familiar with the Crusades and the period, it might be one of the harder settings to get right if you're not used to it. But I think there's so much potential there if you want to run a game. I mean, the failure of the Fourth Crusade's got to be, you know, pretty high on the list of good settings for
games. And there's all the interest of East West.
Yeah. Yeah, what other books came out for 4th Ed? Heirs to Merlin for Stonehenge for Great Britain. Actually England and Wales, technically. Yeah. That is one of the better ones. Heirs to Merlin has almost no game stats at all, so it's completely compatible with 5th edition. In fact, there's a single game stat in the book. It tells you about medieval history. It tells you about the covenants very briefly, the folklore, the major personalities. There's everything you need there to run a really good saga.
Yeah, I find it didn't have very much on covenants, which compared to a lot of the other tribunal books,
it leaves you to do. Yeah, you have to design your own. The Order of Hermes isn't really detailed, but then it was detailed enough for me to run a sort of 3 or 4 year long campaign without. I mean, you know, I used it as an inspiration and change things to make them work the way I wanted, and it was great. You know, it's loose enough that you make your own secrets, your own back history, and, you know, in some ways I really liked it as a setting. It's lightly sketched in, but it works well. I would say that was probably because most people are familiar from even wherever we live.
Yeah,
a lot of people are familiar with Hollywood depictions of the Middle Ages or English and French depictions of that kind of feudal society. It is a simple default medievalism in most people's head. So England is an easy setting to kind of get your head around because we're so familiar with things like Robin Hood.
Yes.
And it is the era of Robin Hood, isn't it? So what else is there in 4th edition?
I'm just Line of the North?
That was actually 3rd edition.
Was it?
Yeah, it's a good book. It covers Scotland, the Loch Leglian Tribunal. It's not a bad book at all, but it's an earlier edition. I don't know if that will be included. The problem is, at the time we're talking about this, we don't know what will be in the bundle of holding.
No.
But
just guessing.
So anyway, let's go back. Let's assume that you'll want to pick it up because it's going to be a good book. The mechanical stuff, they're probably not going to put much of the mechanical stuff out. It's mainly going to be setting books. You're going to be able to use it. The 4th edition rules, I would not advise you to use. Even though you can download them for free, I would use the wonderful 5th edition that you've just bought with your first bundle of holding. It's only available till Tuesday, the bundle of holding as well. You're right.
I think so. Of course, that's Tuesday night to US time, so I don't know if it'll be in your part of the world.
Well, hopefully I'll be going to be able to get a copy, because unless I borrow your credit card, I'm not going to get a copy otherwise, because I just don't have any money at the moment, till Tuesday. So, yeah, I think everyone really should get it. What can we advise people? Where else can they find help if they're setting up their first game? Who is willing to help people? I mean, the fans, as I say, on the forum are really, really good.
Now, on the Atlas website, they do have Samhita Erebunda as a sample covenant, a few Magi.
Yeah, I mean, there are sample stuff on this. There's useful indexes and stuff all over the Ars Magica Atlas Games part of the forum. Go through the Atlas Games website, look for what you can find.
There's a bunch of useful summary PDFs, like where all the virtues and flaws are in different books, where all the shape and material bonuses for magic items are.
But really, what you want to do is listen to some of the early podcasts where we discuss how magic works. That was one. I think the first podcast was... The first one was Why Play Ars Magica. The second one was How the Magic System Works. And then we went on to what spells you need for your characters.
Yes.
We've talked about different ways of setting up sagas. We've talked about a lot of material over the last year or so.
We have.
So, you know, download some of these podcasts and you'll get really annoyed with me and Tom probably by halfway through. But we're trying to be helpful here. Now, okay, Tom. You've decided you're going to pull a game together. You've had three or four friends. I would say to start with three or four. With D&D, you probably want like five, six, seven, eight players, yeah?
Well, if we are playing classic D&D,
yeah,
and we're playing the Shadow on the Borderlands...
Keep
on the Borderlands. You need at least eight of you, plenty of fighters, yes.
Yeah, we played Dungeons & Dragons for the 40th anniversary a few weeks ago. And not having played basic D&D for years, we'd forgotten how utterly deadly it was.
We take five characters in. Total party kill inside an hour and 40 minutes.
It was awful. It was awful. It was a fun game.
Yes.
But we went through two parties in about 3 hours and got nowhere. So, yeah, Ars Magica, you don't want to run it like that. You don't want to kill characters. And that's quite a difficult thing to get your head around. Because a lot of early role-playing games were even Call of Cthulhu to this day, you want characters to go mad or die or between constant levels of threat.
Yes.
In Ars Magica, you need dramatic stories kill off everybody.
You want to keep stories, keep it going, keep there being continuity.
Yes, there has to be some degree of risk.
You can afford to lose some characters, because with troop-style play, you can make sure everyone's got enough characters between them, that the odd character death there won't...
Troop-style play, in Ars Magica, everybody has a pool of grog, so like almost NPCs, but they're not. They're characters who anyone can pick up and play. And they're the fighters, the warriors, who just guard the bodyguards, the servants.
The crafters, the usual.
Some people will play their magicians. Everybody will want to play their magi in the first session. Don't let them. Let half the players play companions. Companions are people like clergymen, knights, witches, noble women, troubadours, scholars, anybody else. There are sort of three character classes, and they're not equal in power. The magi are the most powerful by a long way, then there are the companions, and finally the grogs. Everybody can play grog, so if their character dies, you can still play a grog.
Yeah.
If the grogs die, it's sad, but it's not, you know, it's no one's personal character. The companions, however, are characters you play and become attached to. Don't let everybody play their magi. The temptation is everybody will want to play their wizard in every single session. The game quickly becomes unmanageable.
I mean, it is possible, but the more magi you have everyone competing as to who's going to cast spells, who's going to do this or that. And also, scenarios will become harder and harder, because as your magi get more power, they'll be able to do more things. If you have a group of magi who've all specialised in different things, you'll be able to find people who can solve every situation with a spell. If you just have one or two magi, you can have a scenario which plays their strengths or deliberately plays on their weaknesses and gives everyone in the group the chance to shine.
Yeah, yeah. It's a mistake I made, because everybody loves playing their magi. I used to often let almost everybody play their magi, and maybe one person would play their companion. But it does an injustice to the game. It really does. Also, it's the only game I know where... So, Thomas of Viorne, would you like to go out adventuring? I hear that there is a strange mystical creature seen beyond the hill.
But I've got such fascinating lab work. And my apprentice needs training as well. Oh, and I've got that book to study. Can't we just get the Flambeau to go and shoot it with the fireball again?
So, Ignis of Flambeau, would you like to go and blow up the mystical monster that lurks beyond yonder hill?
Yes, yes. I want to play Ignis of Flambeau in every single adventure.
Oh, okay, so you do want to do it. But most of the time, the trouble you have is trying to find anybody at all who wants to actually go on an adventure.
Well, if you've got the money to afford books, if you've got enough spare magic viz to go and study from it, and you've got fancy lab projects, you can keep yourself busy for ages and ages and go, adventure takes me away from the important stuff.
Right. So when you're thinking about setting up your game, bear in mind that this game is going to take place over years. You want to do sort of one or two, probably do a session or two sessions for the first season while they establish, and then a couple of sessions a season later, but then you might want to skip a couple of seasons, so years passed, and you can cover the whole lives of wizards, which, yeah, to be honest, I've never done, because they're so long lived.
Although we've had a good go with one campaign which went from 1160 up to the mid 1220s.
Yeah, but we never saw a single character even after 60 years into the game. No one's died of old age.
Oh, I don't know, I didn't turn up last week. Has my character come back from Twilight?
Your character's still in Twilight at the moment. We didn't play last week.
Okay.
Yeah. Nobody could make it in the end, so... Yeah, Tom's character is lost in Twilight, which is a strange kind of state you'll read about in the rulebook. So anyway, so it's a different kind of game. It's not a game where you set out to kill everybody, is it? If you kill everybody's character off after each session, they're going to be pretty fed up. The game's also focused on a covenant, and that's the thing. It's like a spaceship, in a sense. It's somewhere you all live, you all work, which holds you together as a team, as a community. And so the covenant's just as important as the characters.
Because the setting of the Covenant will determine what your major have available to them. It will also determine what sort of grogs you have working with you, how they fit in. Are you set up like a castle with people taking the part of castle guards and servants? Or be more set like a working community? Or more set more like a monastery?
I think the biggest mistake you could probably make, though, would be to actually just ask people to turn up and to have mapped out some stats for some goblins and viz sources, and which is a kind of magical treasure, if you like, and a few mysteries, and then ask people to turn up and design their characters and say, you know, Tuesday night we'll play the game, turn up, and expect to roll up characters in the D&D sense and start playing. Because it's going to take you, for 5th edition...
5th edition takes a while. 4th, you could roll things, you could apply a template...
You could do it in 25 minutes, but in 5th edition, if you don't know what you're doing, you're designing the first character, I'm going to guess it could take you an hour to do each character. You need to talk to the players and do that in downtime, preferably, or design characters with them over email, or let them have a copy of the book. Get them to buy the book and get them to design their own characters, and then just check them. If you try and do the characters all together, it could prove very, very painful. There are ways around it. I discussed that in one of my essays that I'm going to link to this. But it is difficult to do. We've done it a few times, haven't we?
We have.
If you've got enough copies of the book and everybody's up for it, it's a great way to start a campaign, though.
I mean, when you set up the Bjornair campaign, we had, what, 3 of us turn up and go, okay, we all want to play this sort of character, let's get cracking.
Yeah, and you just designed your characters between you, didn't you?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what we did all night. We didn't do anything else because we didn't have time. So, you know, that was 3 or 4 hours just designing 3 characters. So, yeah, the other thing I'm going to say is, when you first get the rules, resist the temptation to immediately create a mage. I create a grog. They're very simple. Learn how to create a grog. This is you as a referee. Once you've designed a grog, design a couple of companions. Keep them, you'll be using them later. Then start designing magi.
Yeah.
So you design them in order of complexity. And once you've done all of those, you're ready to explain to your players how to design characters.
See, with the grog, up to three virtues, up to 3 flaws. None of the really complicated ones available. You can just go nice and straightforward. Get your head out, putting your skills on. Nice and straightforward. Companions, a bit more complicated. Magi, to do a mage, you've got to consider what spells they want, what they've got to have in the different arts to be able to cast those spells. By the time you've read through the big spell section enough to work that out, that takes a bit of thinking.
Well, I don't think... I think it's unlikely that anyone who's actually bought the bundle of holding has bothered to listen to all this. But if they have, do buy the 4th edition books. Do check out the Atlas Games forum. Do check out Sub Rosa the fanzine. There's great encyclopedia of Ars Magica stuff called Project Red Cap. And the Atlas Game forum's very friendly fans. Or you can email me and Tom. We'll be only too happy to help you set up a game, get it going, and give advice. But at the end of the day, it's a complicated game and it's got a very high learning curve. And I think for a lot of people, that attracts them to it. And Mythic Europe's a lot of fun. Though you can run it in a fantasy setting just as well, as I keep saying.
You can, yes.
But, you know, let's assume for the moment that you haven't listened to all this because you're actually bought the bundle of holding and want to run your first Ars Magica saga. Let's assume that you're a diehard Ars Magica fan. So, what's going on in the world of Ars Magica at the moment, Tom?
Well, once again, Mr. Roma is busy trying to encourage everyone in the UK to come to Grand Tribunal UK.
That's right.
In fact, you're probably encouraging all your Norwegian friends as well.
Yeah, and this year, I look at my calendar just to check, but it's August the 8th to the 10th. So, Friday the 8th, Saturday the 9th, August the 10th. And it's one of those ones, although we say the 8th, that's really for people to travel here. We have a meal in the evening, play some card games. It's not part of the hardcore Ars Magica, so if you can only arrive on the Saturday, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then it's only one night, you know, you have to pay for. But it really is worth coming to. It's been great fun over the years. This will be our 8th Grand Tribunal. Yeah. Eight UK Grand Tribunals. And
the time has flown.
Also, in other news, much as I'd love to talk more about Grand Tribunal, you can find out more at www.grandtribunal.org. Faith and Flame, the Provincial Tribunal, has been announced. And of course, I still can't say anything about it, which is really annoying, but I've seen the cover. And
so I can't even ask you how long it's been in production?
No, I'm not allowed to say about anything like that because it's under NDA. But yeah.
But at least we can see what the cover looks like.
Yeah, so it's by me, CJ, Ben McFarland, Eric Dahl, Lachie Hayes and Mark Faulkner. And it's going back to one of the older settings. And yes, you can see the cover has a picture of the Tower of Mistridge on it. So that might tell you something.
Not really. Never played in Mistridge.
Ah, okay. Well, if you don't know about Mistridge, then that won't tell you anything at all. Okay, so what else has been going on? Sub Rosa's got a new new issue out, number 14, I think. After the classic that was the House D'Edne issue 13. Have you actually read that?
No.
Oh, you should do. You should do. Have you read my Gare Hill letter?
I have read your contribution, yes.
Yes, the Gare Hill letter is slightly strange. But yeah, if you could get a copy of that, issue 13 is superb. Issue 14, I've had it for a couple of days, and I really want to have time to read it and review it. I've just been so busy, I actually haven't had a chance, and that probably tells you that I'm quite busy writing at the moment. Now, another book that's been announced is Hooks, and the intro is up, and I haven't actually looked at the intro yet.
I've seen the... Oh, is it the first couple of pages? Just so you can see what the different chapters are called and what the little scenario is about. Each one's based on trying to get you onto a different little book. So it's to try and encourage you to make use of all those supplements you've got.
Right.
See. Or have not got, as the case may be.
Yeah, so they kind of introduce what the other supplements do.
And... Yes. So each of the chapters got a scenario. And each scenario will try... It uses bits of the setting... And it uses those bits of the setting in such a way as to give you an opportunity to use a particular supplement.
I do like the little artwork there, the woodcut. So the scenarios are Birthright, New Deal, Into the Valley. Wasn't that the Skids or UK Sub? The Valley. It was a punk classic from the 70s. Or
quite possibly.
Small Game, The River, Echoes of the Ancient Dead, Salvation, To the Dark Tower. And were we playtesters on this one?
Yes, we must be. Simply because I recognise the plots. Okay. For half of these. But only half of these.
Right, so we playtested some of them. Oh, yeah, I do recognise that one. I won't say which one, but yeah.
Yeah, I know. I remember that one. Those were beautiful NPCs in that one.
Yeah, I think it's a great book. I think I was quite enthusiastic about it. You know, but then again, one of the things I've noticed, actually, is books that I'm really enthusiastic about just don't always seem to be that popular. They don't seem to... I mean, I thought Hibernia was a lovely book, and all of the authors were really, really excited by Hibernia, but there just doesn't seem to be much buzz about it on the forum.
I don't know why. I mean, it's a decent book.
I don't think there was any great discussion of it, was there? I mean, it seems a shame.
So maybe it's just not caught fire in the popular imagination, got people thinking, oh, is the calendar working with this? Or people saying, oh, with this thing here, does it contradict other things? Because you know how people do like to get on and talk about bits of European history or bits of the game setting.
Anyway, this has been Arcane Connection number 15. Just to remind you that the Bundle of Holding is available from www.bundleofholding.com, I believe. Just Google it, you'll find it easily. And until Tuesday, the 3rd of March, I believe, 4th of March, you'll be able to pick up a whole load of RPG PDFs, including Ars Magica 5th edition there, for at the moment $15.02.
Yes.
So I would encourage you to do that. And that the next bundle of holding will apparently contain 4th edition books.
That's what they say.
And with this, it's your greatest opportunity yet to get into Ars Magica if you haven't already. So, I've been Chris Roma, or CJ. This is
I'm still Tom.
Still Tom. Thank you. Good night.